Anybody who owns a dog knows the joys and frustrations of trying to communicate with a pet. Does the dog want to go out? Does she need water? Is it playtime? That's the dog trying to communicate its needs. Now, how about when we want the dog to do something? Are we getting across? Recent work at Oregon State University's Human-Animal Interaction Lab examined how well dogs respond to encouragement to complete a task. And in some cases, human encouragement did improve the outcomes. We assume it's a little more than saying, who's a good dog? But let's find out. Lauren Brubaker is the lead on the research. She's a doctoral student at the Oregon State University Human-Animal Interaction Lab. Lauren, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, first, tell us about the lab. It sounds fascinating.
Oh, what? Sorry?
Tell us about the lab itself. The work sounds fascinating.
Oh, yeah. So our lab at Oregon State does a lot of work with dogs and cats especially, but we look at all sorts of animals. So we've done work with pigs, with horses, with cows. And one of the things that we're particularly interested in is the human-animal bond. So we want to look at different things that might affect animal cognition that humans do, that humans might engage in that could influence how an animal behaves in a specific scenario. So we look at things like animal attachment, animal cognition, like dog problem solving, which is what this study was about, as well as animal sociability. So how well do animals get along with familiar people, with unfamiliar people, and what sorts of things are we doing that might influence that?
Wow, it seems like this is a really a rich trove of things that you can dive into all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really a growing field. So there are so many opportunities to look at different things and different aspects with all sorts of different species.
And how long has the Human-Animal Interaction Lab existed at OSU?
It's existed for maybe about 5 years. My group, there's one other PhD student and a PhD student who just graduated, and we're the first ones to kind of go through this program at a graduate level. So it's still pretty new, just like the field itself. We're sort of still growing and still developing, but it's been a really, really successful lab and a really great experience.
And I gather that everybody in the lab does everything. I noticed you got a video credit for the YouTube video of one of these experiments.
Yeah. So we for that particular experiment, I got to travel sort of all over the state of Oregon to look at search and rescue dogs. And we videotape everything that we do with the animals so that we can go back through and code them for certain behaviors. And we can also look at different things that the animals are doing, like on this particular study when we looked at the success that the dogs had. We can actually live code that, but then we can go back through and double check it with the videos. So we do. We video record everything. In our lab, we have what are called nest cams, which are sort of like surveillance videos. We have them hooked onto the wall so we can see everything. And in that way, we can get a better idea of what's actually going on in the test without ourselves being in the room so that we don't disrupt the test itself.
Okay, that's an important thing, sure. So what prompted this particular line of research into seeing how dogs would take encouragement from their people?
Well, this task, this problem-solving task that we have was something that we'd used with wolves and dogs in the past, comparing how wolves performed on the task to dogs. And what we found is that dogs will actually look back at the person much more than wolves will. And so dogs seem to engage in this sort of social interaction, and we're not entirely sure why dogs do that. So it could be because they are like almost asking for help. It could be because they're unsure of what to do, and so they're looking to the person for guidance. But in any case, dogs engage in that behavior, but wolves don't. And so what we wanted to know is what happens if you change human behavior. So if the person is just standing there and not giving any indicators to the dog is actually not very successful at the task. So we thought, okay, well, what will happen if the human begins to encourage the dog? What if the dog is looking to the human for some sort of feedback on what to do? If the person provides that feedback, will the dog then be successful?
Something as simple as keep trying or yeah, go ahead, that kind of acknowledgement?
Yeah, so we don't actually put any restrictions on what the person can do, except that the person is not allowed to touch the dog or the puzzle box, the container. So the person can wander around the room. They can get very excited. They can point They can give commands. It's totally up to the person as to what they want to do, but they just can't touch the dog or the container.
Lauren Brubaker is the lead researcher at the Oregon State University Human-Animal Interaction Lab into this work with dogs and humans and encouragement. And the reporting on this is titled The Effects of Past Training, Experience, and Human Behavior on a Dog's Persistence at an Independent Task. Join the conversation on the exchange. Talk about ways in which you have noticed that that your dog perhaps responds to your encouragement, or does it maybe. Either way, we want to hear the story. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Lauren, you were talking about how dogs and wolves differ here. Is that any real surprise, given that, dogs are socialized with humans and wolves are generally not?
Perhaps not, although on that particular study, we were using wolves that were highly socialized to people.
Okay.
So these are wolves at Wolf Park in Indiana. And we can actually go in with the wolves. You can pet the wolves. Of course, you have to go through a training before you do that. But these wolves are actually socialized to people. And so while it may not be all that surprising, it is surprising that dogs will engage in that looking back behavior sort of at the detriment of themselves, because in this scenario, humans can't help them. We can't open the container for them. So this is sort of it may be a way for dogs to try to solve the problem that we've given them, but it's not an effective one. And so dogs are doing this kind of at the detriment of their own success. But we did do a follow-up study where we actually looked at the genetic breakdown of this. And we're trying to find like any specific sort of genetic markers that dogs may have that are causing them to engage in this social behavior that's almost inappropriate in this context.
Huh.
And what we found is that dogs actually do have very specific genetic markers that are similar to ones in people that cause this sort of hypersocial behavior in dogs, and wolves do not have those markers. So this may actually be due to the domestication of the dog, that this sort of human-centric type behavior where the dog is focused on the person and less on these independent tasks.
Okay. Well, I mean, it makes a certain amount of sense when you think about the fact that they're looking to the people who feed them and otherwise take care of them. But let's move on into what you did specifically in the study. So you had essentially two groups of dogs, is that right?
Yes, we had a group of pet dogs and a group of search and rescue dogs.
And so the dogs and so the pet dogs, did you do anything other than be random about deciding which pet dogs you were taking?
Nope, we recruited them from the community, which is what we typically do for all of our studies, where we sort of send out various recruitment things, and people can email in to sign up for the study. Our only requirement for this particular study was that dogs could not have an extensive training history, so they were just sort of your typical run-of-the-mill pet dogs. The search and rescue dogs that we used were all certified or were nearly certified, so they had been in training for quite a while. So that was the requirement for the search and rescue dogs.
And was there much variety in the breeds of the search and rescue dogs?
There was, actually. We were a little bit concerned about that because we didn't want any breed effects. So we wanted to have variability in order to make it a true comparison to pet dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually did get a huge variety of search and rescue dogs of all different sizes. We had a couple of mixed breeds. We had a Papillon mix, which is like a very small, small fluffy dog in the search and rescue group. So we had a pretty wide range in both groups.
Okay, good to know. They're not all German Shepherds or something like that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So why, though, search and rescue dogs and not bomb-sniffing dogs or drug-sniffing dogs or some other kind of working dog?
Well, the search and rescue dogs we wanted to use specifically because they're trained to work independently of humans. So a search and rescue dog sort of has to go out into the wilderness and can be actually totally separate from its handler, but it still has to perform its task. And so we thought that on something like this, where the dog has to solve it independently of a person, we thought that maybe the search and rescue dogs would be better at that because they have this independent training history.
Okay, when you mentioned the puzzle box, so they all got the same task, which was essentially, what, a treat in Tupperware kind of thing?
Yeah. It's a treat inside a little Tupperware container that we put a rope through. So we put a rope through the lid, and the dog can solve it or open it by shaking the rope or by biting through the bottom of it or by biting the lid off. So there's different ways that they can solve it, but it is totally solvable. The dogs don't necessarily know that, but we know that it's solvable by dogs of all different sizes, of all different breeds.
And Lauren, is there any baseline for how well dogs do this task in general in a variety of conditions?
Yeah, in general, dogs don't tend to do very well. They tend to really struggle with it, partly because they spend so much time looking at the person in sort of an effort to maybe ask for help or to ask for feedback. We don't know 100% why that is, but in general, dogs don't do very well. We typically see, like, if we test around 20 dogs, we usually get a success rate of maybe around 10%. That's pretty normal, sometimes less than that.
Okay, so then we're talking to Lauren Brubaker, a doctoral student at the Oregon State University Human-Animal Interaction Lab, about how dogs do on a task when they're encouraged by humans. You can join us on The Exchange, talk about dog and human interactions and how much we get off of each other. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So this is the part that really got interesting for me, was that you presented a couple of different human situations for the dogs.
Yes, yeah, so we had one condition where the humans were just weren't going to stand in the room and they weren't going to give any feedback. So they present the dog with this puzzle box, and then they take a step back and they just stand there. So they're not giving off any sort of obvious cues to the dog. Then we had another condition where the dog was left alone in the room. So the owner would give the dog the puzzle box and then they would turn and immediately walk out of the room. And then our third one was our encouragement condition, which we've already talked about a little bit, where the person was allowed to give the dog some sort of indication as to what it was supposed to be doing without touching the container or the dog.
Okay, so three different scenarios then. In the room but not moving, in the room but encouraging, and not in the room at all.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And how well did the dogs know the people, Lauren?
Excuse me?
How well do they know the people, these people with which each dog is familiar?
Oh, yeah. These are all, so we all used owners of the dog. So these dogs have quite a history with people. We also record how long the person has owned the dog. For the search and rescue dogs, we recorded how long the dog had been in training so that we can get a pretty good idea of exactly what kind of history the dog has with this person. And for the most part, we had dogs that had been owned for at least 6 months by this person and had been in training for at least 9 months in the search and rescue dog group.
Was there some expectation, Lauren, that the search and rescue dogs, particularly with the people in the room encouraging them, would do better?
We sort of thought that might be the case, but we were surprised at how much better the search and rescue dogs did. Like I said, we usually don't see a very high success rate on this particular task, so much so that the task sort of became more of something that we would look at just to see what the dog would do. So we would give them this task just to see if the dog would persist or if the dog would look back at the person. It sort of got to the point where we didn't necessarily expect that dogs would solve it. Mm-hmm. So to see this huge success rate on the search and rescue dogs when they were encouraged was really actually kind of surprising. So it wasn't surprising necessarily that the search and rescue dogs do better when encouraged, but it was surprising at just how much better they did.
So you mentioned 10% as the baseline for solving the puzzle. How good was it for the search and rescue dogs with people in the room encouraging them?
For search and rescue dogs, we saw a success rate of right under 50%.
Wow.
So a really big increase at that point.
And how about the pet dogs? What was the best situation for them?
The pet dogs they did about around 10% across the board. They didn't necessarily do better in the encouragement condition in terms of solving the task, although the pet dogs did look more at the person during the encouragement. So it seems that pet dogs are sort of understanding that something has changed and that there might be something that is going on. Maybe the task is now changed to more of a social play. But the search and rescue dogs seem to understand that the task had become goal-oriented. So we don't know if that shift was a result of the person's encouragement. So maybe there's something that the person is doing that makes their encouragement more effective, or if that's a result of this extensive training history that the dog has. Maybe the dog has understood at this point that when the human starts encouraging them, they know that they're supposed to be doing something. That pet dogs just don't have that extensive training history, and so they don't have that understanding as well.
You mentioned that the pet dogs would look for answers. I forget where I was going with this, but was there anything that in particular? Oh, that they would turn it into more of a game. That it was sort of like let's just play it and throw this around the room instead of let's actually try to get the thing out of the puzzle box. Was that unanticipated?
A little bit. We sort of would see at this point, we sort of had seen quite a few pet dogs go through this task, and for the most part, they seem to kind of treat it like it's some sort of game, which is actually kind of nice that dogs seem to enjoy the task as much as they do. But it's almost like dogs sort of lose sight of the fact that there's some sort of goal in mind. They get so excited about the fact that the person is now engaging with them. And again, this sort of goes back to that social interaction to the point where it's almost detrimental to the goal in this particular case, where like the dog gets so excited about the fact that the person is encouraging them to do something that they don't actually do the thing that we're encouraging them to do. Having said that, that doesn't mean that encouragement is bad for pet dogs. It just means that for whatever reason in this particular scenario, the encouragement is maybe less effective at getting the dog to do the task, but it is effective at getting the dog's attention.
All right. So the dog likes the attention, but doesn't necessarily do well at the task at hand.
Right.
Let's take a call. We have Ann in Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Lauren Brubaker from the Oregon State University Human-Animal Interaction Lab. Hi, Ann.
Hi there. So I'm 76 years old, and I've been around people and dogs all my life. And as far as I can see, it looks like only about 10% of pet dogs are well-trained. And my observation is that dogs are better at training people than people are at training dogs. And so that might be something you might want to research in the future.
All right. Thanks for that, Ann. Appreciate it. So I can think about the examples in my own house where after a while the dog seems to be the one who calls the shots about, okay, I'm going to start looking like I really need to go out now. Come on, let's go. Let's go outside, even if it's not to do excretory processes.
Right, yeah. And one thing that I always like to tell people, whenever we talk about animal training, that's really a two-way street, right? We're trying to communicate with our dog, but our dog is communicating just as much back to us. And sometimes our dog is better at communicating with us than we are at necessarily communicating with them.
Huh. So I'm curious about, I think you mentioned a little bit of this at the outset of the discussion, though. Was there any specifications to the people when they were encouraging the dogs in your experiment, things they needed to say or do? They couldn't touch them. I noticed you said that part. But was there anything else about verbiage or tone of voice or anything?
No, and the reason that we didn't put any restrictions on them is because we really wanted the person to act as naturally as possible. There are studies that give people scripts to read or that tell people a very specific way of how to act, and that can be very good for looking at when like certain phrases or something like that might be effective for a dog. But in this particular scenario, what we really wanted to capture is that human-animal bond. And one way to do that is to look at the way that the person tries to communicate with the dog in as naturally a way as possible.
So what's what do we draw from this particular research, that, particularly for the pet dogs?
So one thing that we can look at for this research is that we know that encouragement can affect the way that the dog behaves. It can affect its gazing behavior. So now the next step is to figure out, okay, is there something unique about search and rescue dogs that makes them better at understanding this encouragement communication, or is it the training history, or is it something that the person is doing? Because as we sort of talked about, we know that training is a two-way street, that it's a two-way communication. And so there may actually be something that the person has learned, the person, the search and rescue handler has learned the most effective way to communicate with their dog because of this training history. So the next sort of step is to figure out maybe what that particular thing is that makes those dogs successful at an independent task, and to see if we can replicate that with pet dogs. So if it is an extensive training history, does that mean that if we put pet dogs through a training class, does that make them better at this particular task? Or if we take the people and we teach them how maybe the best way to communicate with their dog is, does that make the dog more successful at the task? Or like I said, is there something like some sort of maybe genetic quality that makes the dog a good search and rescue dog that translates into success with this particular task? We don't know at this point. So that's sort of where we're headed with our next phase of research.
Lauren, I have to presume that the search and rescue dogs were chosen to be search and rescue dogs because they at least measured up in some kind of preliminary training. Is that fair?
Yeah. In fact, when I was talking with several of the handlers, they would report to me that they would go to like a litter of dogs or go maybe to a rescue or something like that, and they would look for dogs that had very specific qualities that they were interested in. And a lot of times, interestingly enough, they couldn't always name exactly what it was about the dog that they were looking for. They just knew it when they saw it.
Wow.
And so there could be something that the dogs are doing or some sort of genetic basis for their success as search and rescue dogs. But like I said, we don't know for sure at this time.
Okay, more research to come at the Human-Animal Interaction Lab at Oregon State University, where Lauren Brubaker is a doctoral student researching how dogs do, both pet dogs and search and rescue dogs, with human encouragement. Lauren, thanks so much for sharing the research with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.